Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. I'm Shauna Compton Game. This is Millennial Money. And today we are taking you on a musical journey. Jeff is going to have an interview with Ruby Vale and the Soulphonics, a cool band that you should check out. Ruby's got an amazing voice, and I am so in love with her sound now. So if you are new to Ruby Vale, hopefully you enjoy this interview with her and listening to a few small clips of her music.
Millennial Money with Shauna Compton Game. It will expand your brain.
So for Millennial Money Music this week, we have a band that I just recently wrote an article on and actually debuted their new video and their single. They're a soul band out of Atlanta called Ruby Vale and the Soulphonics. And I just love them so much, we just had to have them on the podcast. And I think you guys are really going to dig them. Dig their sound, and you're going to dig our conversation with Ruby here. So we chatted with Ruby recently about their evolving sound, their new album that's coming out in 2017, and the tribute that they have for their adoptive city of Atlanta, which is featured in their new video. So with their new single and video, Try It On A Smile, Ruby Vale and the Soulphonics aim to add their talents to the new wave of American soul, American Soul 2.0. I think you're going to really dig our conversation with Ruby. It's a lot more about just music or about just being a singer. She's just really interesting conversation about life and about what it takes to actually become a singer. It could transfer to anything, not just being a singer. Could be an artist, could be any dream that you're kind of chasing. This is a band that's really kind of chasing that. She has a second career. So I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation with Ruby Vale and the Soulphonics from Atlanta. So tell me a little bit about Ruby Vale and the Soulphonics. Who are you guys?
So Ruby Val and the Soulphonics are a sweet Southern soul band, and we like to follow in the footsteps of some of the greats that have come before us. We get a lot of comparisons to James Brown, Otis Redding, Aretha Franklin, Sharon Jones, and the Dap Kings even. And, you know, I think we as a unit have kind of evolved our sounds into bringing a lot of diverse influences. So it's like soul music with a modern twist. And that modern twist comes from a lot of our backgrounds and influences and the diversity that we have as a band. So you get something very unique when you listen to the Soulphonics. And I think it's something very classic, but not retro, if that's a good way to describe it. But yeah, we started in Gainesville, Florida over 10 years ago. And then, I'm so sorry. Okay. I have an alarm going off. We started, you know, 10 years ago in Gainesville, Florida, and now have evolved in Atlanta for the last almost 10 years. So it's been a long journey and a wonderful one to be making soul music in this way and be on the brink of our next release is really exciting.
So why did you guys choose soul music?
I always say it kind of chose us. I've been influenced at a very young age by early Beatles, early Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin, even folk singers like Joni Mitchell, Paul Simon. And somehow it always ties back to soul, I've found. And some would say it also ties back to old school country music, which I can't deny, you know, also came from the church. So much of it was embedded into my childhood, and I think some of the other members of the band as well. So it was just an easy, heartfelt kind of notion to start making soul music.
So you have an interesting journey to becoming a singer. So, and you didn't start out becoming a singer, and that wasn't your first career choice. How did you fall into singing? What was your first career choice?
Well, I'll try to keep this brief, but I initially went into college after high school. It was when CSI was very popular on TV, and I really wanted to be a forensic scientist. And so I, like, got really into gore and blood and guts, and I realized that I was absolutely horrible at chemistry. It was just not how my brain was going to work. So I opened the course book, I think, like, freshman year, and I landed on design and advertising. And I said, okay, great. Well, I know that I've always wanted to sing since I was 8 years old, and I come from a very, I'm not going to say rigid background, but just a background of you can have your talents, but you should also have as high of an education as you possibly can. So I knew that I was going to have to go to school for a while, so I just chose something that might be able to help my music in the long run. And advertising, design, marketing, branding has been a phenomenal backbone and plan B, if you will, to go alongside of the music career.
And that's something you still do as well as music, right?
Yep. I'm currently sitting in front of my two nerdy monitors here at my work from home station. Yes. So it's become a great tool for me to be able to go out and tour, have time to write music, you know, make my own schedule for the most part. But it took a lot of trial and error. And it also took a lot of full-time work at agencies in order for me to get up my client base and for me to meet people in that respect for me as a designer.
And how did you fall into singing, and why did you choose to chase singing?
Yes, I guess I'd never finished answering that question.
That's okay.
I got into singing through my aunt and my uncle. They were a huge influence on me. My parents, I'm of East Indian descent. My parents are engineers and nurses, and my sister's a pharmacist, so all very professional. And you know, while those fields have creativity in them, nobody in my family was a creative musician per se. So I think the influence of my aunt and uncle coming in as adopted, they were adopted from, they're originally from Great Britain. They're essentially white folks that were adopted into my Indian family by my grandfather. So there's like a story right there of like overcoming, you know, so much to make the art happen, you know? So anyway, long story short, they played me all sorts of records, and I just heard soul music, and I said, okay, this is something that I'd like to do, but not specifically to soul. I listened to, you know, early R&B and a lot of folk music, like I said, classic rock and stuff like that growing up. And then eventually I made my way into choral programs. So I was in all girls choir, all state, things like that. And I just always kind of kept it as a hobby. And then when I got to the University of Florida, I met there Spencer and Scott and a wonderful guy named Wester Joseph, who's an amazing guitar player. And he kind of gave me the confidence that I needed and the tap on the shoulder to say, hey, you know, you can sing. Why don't you just try out for this band that I'm in? And he was actually in the previous version of the Soulphonics, which was called The Elements. And that's some old school trivia on us. But he said, you know, go ahead and try out. So I did. And then we changed the band name and it became Soulphonics and Ruby Vell for a long time. And then after the first, on the release of the first album, it was changed to Ruby Vell and the Soulphonics. And that was 2012. So yeah, it's been my heartfelt project for over a decade. And, you know, we've all stayed really committed to making the best music that we can with the best message for its genre. You know, it's important. Soul music has always been important. And I think now more than ever, we're seeing that it's not going anywhere.
Right, right. In fact, it's probably even growing a little bit more, too.
Yes. And by that parameters, it's growing sonically as well. Mm. You know, you have, I'm always citing Hiatus Coyote and how much I love their approach to what they do with soul. And I think it's just a testament to the genre. You can be classic and authentic with it. You can go left field and go, you know, jazz, free jazz. It's just more of the emotion behind it that really truly makes it soul music.
Right. And you guys chose to live in Atlanta over some other big music cities. Why did you guys choose Atlanta?
Atlanta is about creativity. It's about inclusion. Atlanta's been a really great incubator for us to grow. You know, having an 8-piece band, there are a ton of financial aspects. And the South is generally a lot cheaper than some of the other cities in the U.S. So financially, we did look at that. And, you know, we had done a lot of stuff in Florida and just knew it was time to move on. And for me, what brought me to Atlanta was the creative school, the Creative Circus. That's where I got my training in graphic design and visual arts and branding. Excellent school. They pump out so many creatives. And it's just such a wonderful, I'm not going to say lucrative career, but it's just a wonderfully creative and full career. So I really have to like give love to that school for helping me like get to this point where I'm freelancing and also creating music. But I kind of lost track of your question again.
Well, just why did you guys choose Atlanta?
Oh, for a number of reasons. I think fiscally, it made sense for us to keep our costs down. Spencer, as I said, he owns his own studio called Diamond Street Studios. And he sold his car in order to do that and set that studio up there. And in a lot of places, the car wouldn't have been enough, you know. So he was able to really maximize on his space and his equipment. And that allowed us to be able to easily record anytime we want, to the point where we get overly picky and our work takes a while to put out because we have full power to tweak it as much as possible.
Right.
Yeah. So that's one reason. I think another reason is like the people here. Like I said, they really, there's a reverence for creativity. There's that opportunity, I think, a lot of times that isn't available in other places, in other cities. And it just seemed like the natural way for us to spread love, just coming up from the deep South and going out into the world.
Do you think that,
and you know, it is a hotbed for so much that came before us, James Brown, Sharon Jones, everybody that, you know, has been in and around Augusta, in these pockets of Georgia with incredible music, they have all had some serious struggles to overcome. So there's something about being here and being in that energy. And I talk a lot about that in the interview we did with the Bitter Southerner, which is a popular publication here in the South. It really touches on what it is, what the essence of it is that we're here, why we're here.
Right. Do you think that's why Atlanta's become really kind of a hotbed for millennials or young people to kind of move there?
Yeah, I think the inclusion, the low cost of any kind of startup idea or low cost of housing is helping. I think the advocates here, we have Georgia Music Partners, we have Choose ATL, we have organizations that are tied to the Metro Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, then the mayor's office, and the tourist boards that are all deeply investing in entertainers. And not only just entertainers, but also people in film production. You know, we've seen a huge increase in that industry here. Mm. Like just across from my house right now, they film movies all the time. So we have a lot of advocates for the millennial generation of creators. And so I do feel like it is working and people are hearing that Atlanta is a great place to be. And I hope that I've had some kind of effect on that because I've worked on a number of different initiatives for the city because I really do believe in it. And it has helped me in so many ways, not just as an artist, you know.
Right. Well, with that, also, there's lots of articles written about how entrepreneurs can learn from musicians. Do you see yourself as an entrepreneur? And how has that shaped your music career?
I absolutely do and always have. I think I understand that music in our current paradigm is based largely around the business aspect. I think you have to really have a tenacious zeal for writing and getting the songs out there. So that's something like that I kind of need to work on, you know, like I can spend a lot of time on the business side sometimes, and that's great. But immersing myself more in the creative side is something that I constantly need to remind myself to keep going and to get back to and to focus on. So, you know, I think in a lot of ways, there's all these tools available to us, but if we're spending all our time using these tools and not creating our artwork, then, you know, there's kind of a vicious cycle that ensues.
Right. Well, I mean, it could be just a full-time job just to be a freelance designer, let alone if you're trying to be a singer as well on the side, if you will. But they're both basically full-time jobs.
Absolutely, they are. But, you know, I think we do it. I know we do it for the love, yeah. And we do it to be able to spread a positive message. I mean, sometimes we do have songs that are, you know, based on somebody's heartbreak that I wanted to write about, or based on somebody's deadbeat husband, or, you know, like we have those kind of songs, but we do try to focus what we do to be artistic, social change from an artistic perspective, I think is where our brand of soul music really shines.
I
tried to focus on that from a design perspective as well as from, you know, how we sound and our sonic vibes that we're putting out.
Right. Well, because I think so many times people think of soul music or, you know, older 50s or 60s music as just kind of, you know, teeny bopper fluff kind of music. But you guys and some others are making a little deeper music, but with that still sound.
Absolutely. And I mean, we're not the first ones to do it by far. I mean, I would cite Stax Records as probably some of the most influential soul music that you'll hear.
Right. So,
I think just doing this at the moment, it seems so critical, you know, with everything that we're going through, that we rely on music, we rely on arts, we rely on safe spaces, you know, to kind of help us along. So I'm very excited for the show tonight at the Earl. It could be a time for minority women like me to crouch and hide, and I'm not doing that.
What were some of your influences growing up that you decided to become a singer?
I have quite a few. At the top of the list, I'd have to say is Aretha Franklin, and just underneath her would probably be D'Angelo. And then underneath him would probably be Led Zeppelin. So there's like such a mix even just between the three. But those were early influences for me. The Beatles, Annie DeFranco, like I said, Paul Simon, Curtis Mayfield, Queen. My dad loved Queen so much. He played so much Queen growing up. I don't know, just that 60s and 70s era to me is the sweetest spot of music. I feel like in every genre, they were just so expressive and so able to move people. So I really try to, like, whatever I'm doing with the music, it needs to be a movement for people to connect with.
Right.
And I think that era got it really, really right.
Yeah, I would say so as well. You guys are working on a new album right now too, and you have a new single and a video out. So tell us a little bit about the new video and the song, and then also the album coming out next year.
Awesome. Well, the video is quite an amazing feat to release. It released exclusively on Axis.com, and it's called Tried on a Smile. And we posted it, and at the second we posted it, we also realized that it was World Smile Day and National Smile Day. So it ended up being this amazing story of, you know, just bringing a smile to people's faces for no reason at all. This was like pre-election or voting, and everybody was just hanging out and needed a smile. So we posted this video, and it was really awesome to see the response from people and how much they enjoyed the song. The song was written by my bandmate and trumpet player. His name is Jason Collier. And it's one of the few songs that I didn't actually write. I've written the majority of the songs with Spencer and Scott. And then we let Jason take this one. He wrote it in full, and we loved it. So we turned it into a song, recorded it at Diamond Street, and then created the video with a local production company in Atlanta called Black Green Gold. And so that just came out recently, and if you haven't seen it, everybody, please go watch, because it will bring a smile to your face, and it's like some really good straight-ahead classic soul.
Yeah, no, it's a great song, and also the video alone, too, showcases a lot of what Atlanta is all about and their creativity and stuff.
Absolutely. There's so many creators here that deserve and are warranted, you know, more credit and more amplification, if you will.
Right, right. And then what's one of you talked about feeling in your music and stuff like that. What's one of your favorite things about playing live and connecting with your audience?
I would say essentially it is that moment of connection with the audience that I absolutely crave and love. It's a moment where there are no colors on anybody's skin. There's nothing but giant big hearts in one room, and they connect in a way that I've never experienced before. So having that feeling again and again and again and again is something that I always want for myself. And I know that it creates good energy around it. So it's essentially for others as well. But yeah, I mean, it's no different from being an entrepreneur and having a product that you want to touch lives and change lives as well. So I think that there are so many parallels, at least between the social entrepreneur and being an artist or a musician. I really can't separate the two, because I have the same intention long-term with my design skills and my branding skills as an entrepreneur as I do as a musician. So it really does essentially come down to the love and the energy of spreading that love.
Right. Well, and with that, do you have any pearls of wisdom to give any other musician that is really wanting to break free and trying to get into the business and stuff?
I would say try to get management early. I didn't have any idea that management was going to benefit me so much, because I was always thinking, you know, I got this, I can wear these different hats and manage these relationships and, you know, do it all. But you can't do it all. So find somebody that you love and that loves you and that believes in your music early as possible, because they'll be able to help guide you. And I regret not doing that earlier.
Right.
So that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
thanks, Kristen. Love you, Kristen.
Well, and also too, that you have somebody else kind of doing a lot of the work for you, but then you're still managing all the creative stuff.
Right. And also I will add, you know, my bandmates and I, the three of us, we came up as business partners in units. So there's plenty of work that's done on their end too, mixing, mastering, arranging, you know, helping with branding. So we've been a good working team for a long time, but I wish that we would have had a management entity to kind of oversee the three of us as partners, early on. That's just one thing, I guess, structure related, but everybody's band or musical entities is set up so differently, but you can always have an ally and always have somebody that's trying to help push your music forward.
Well, tell us about that. So how many members do you have in the band, and how many members are you guys of the management team, if you will, that kind of create everything?
So there's 7 to 8 in the band, and there's 3 partners of the LLC. The creation of some of the songs has really shifted. On our first album, It's About Time, it was really the 3 of us. And this second album, we've opened it up. And this single, we've opened it up. So there's been more of an inclusion on the writing side from more of the members in the band.
Right.
But the reason we keep the partnership small is because a lot of people in the band are career musicians and have other projects themselves. So we're not trying to keep them tied and you know, trying to keep them focused on one project when that's not really their reality.
Right. And that's, I mean, it's really a small business is what you're running too.
Absolutely. So we're answering that question of is musicianship also entrepreneurship? Right. It absolutely is.
Right. Are there any bands that you're listening to these days in Atlanta?
Yes, absolutely. There's quite a few. We've had Gringo Starr around for a long time. Very kick butt band. My favorite is Claws. They're some of the nicest people you'd ever meet and make amazing trip hop, psychedelic trip hop kind of music. It's really, really, really good. We have Little Tybee. We have Adron. We have Bosco, which she's also in New York, but she's like been one of my main influences here on the scene. Really powerful singer songwriter. You know, there's just so many on the scene that I can't even list everybody, but I did work on a episode that's on PBS called Music Voyager, and it has, people like Killer Mike in it and, Christian Bush from the Bush Brothers. So it really gives a sense of like the depth of character in the music genres that are active in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to check that out, it's online. It's on our Ruby Bell and the Soulphonics YouTube page. And it really gives a good insight into what's going on in Atlanta on the music scene, food scene, fashion scene, you name it. But that's been really great because I got to tip my hat to Claws and they got to do the episode after I did. And they were on the episode with Janelle Monáe. So that was like, woo, because, you know, she's Atlanta's sweetheart. For sure.
Right. Yeah. I highly recommend watching that too. It's a really cool show. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was great. It kind of all came together in one week in November, and I actually got to write for some of it and come up with the segments and send out call sheets and pretend I was a production assistant. So it was awesome. It was a really great experience for Atlanta, and it's brought a lot of good things our way and the band's way by being part of it. And I think they shared it in 22 other nations. So it's got a large reach, and a lot of people that have seen it finding out about Soulphonics for the first time. So bring us to your country. We want to play for you.
So last question I have, if you could spend an hour with one of your musical heroes, who would it be and what would you guys talk about?
Oh my gosh, what a question.
It's like picking your own favorite child.
You know what? I'm going to say Tina Turner. I would love to sit down with Tina Turner and just see how it was to be a woman of such proportions in such a limited thought society. And just learning from what she's had to go through, I think would help me immensely on my journey. Right. So, yes. And also how she danced in heels for that long. Because I can get down in some heels for a while, but they come off right after a show. And I don't know how she did everything she did.
She seemed like she always be the type of person that'd be working out in her heels too, you know, because that's why she has that big stacked body and stuff.
Yeah, she's just the most amazing thing.
Yeah,
and her level of strength and compassion and forgiveness for her journey is just so mind-blowing to me. I read her biography early on, from my uncle. He always had records and books about musicians and stuff like that, and I just started reading about her and was mesmerized ever since. And I know she's really into Buddhism and meditation, which is also a huge part. We didn't touch on that, but spirituality and spiritual readiness is a huge part of being a musician and an artist and an entrepreneur. So yeah, I think she's the perfect pick to sit down with for sure.
I think that's definitely a good one.
Tina.
So if anyone wants to, when people want to find your music or your videos and stuff like that, where do they go to?
Ruby Vell and the soulphonics.com. It's our website that I run and have made myself. And you can find everything you need on there. We're also on Facebook and active on Instagram. So those places are probably the best to keep in touch.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for doing this. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to speak with you later when the album's out and get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, absolutely.